Hello, I am Julie Zeglin, the managing editor of Technically, a news site that covers local economies and change. And this is Technically on the Record, our new weekly podcast and show in which we will do a deep dive into one of our market's biggest stories of the week. It's a chance for us to look into our reporters' virtual notebooks and hear lessons from the tech communities of Philly, Baltimore, DC, Delaware, and Pittsburgh. So this week I have with me lead reporter of Delaware, Holly Quinn, who has been working on this series about Black and Latinx entrepreneurship in Wilmington. Thanks for joining, Holly.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Can you give our watchers and listeners an overview of that series?
Sure. It's a 12-part series. It's a partnership with the Wilmington Alliance, and really what they wanted was to get more insights into what's working and what's not working as far as supporting Black and brown business owners in Wilmington. And as of this week, we're at part six. We have just finished the United Tech Project, went up yesterday. We've also done Levity, we've done Nerd It Now, Wilmington Green Box, Wind Factory, Veronica's Kitchen, and I think that's it. So far. And so we have six more coming, and they're all just talking about their challenges and as well as successes as small business owners and entrepreneurs in Wilmington.
Yeah, great. And what are some of the major themes that you've been hearing from these entrepreneurs?
Well, definitely the big one is lack of funding options, lack of issues with getting loans, whether they can't get them at all or whether they need to be, are requiring security that isn't always required by other people. I think that one of the main things that we do here is that a lot of the entrepreneurs will sort of realize a couple of years in that they are having to jump through a lot more hoops than a lot of their peers who are not Black and brown, as they're getting into more networking. And so it's really a structural, issue. It's which makes it more complicated. I think, when you're talking about what can we do to make things better, a lot of times they're very big, bigger things than just, let's have a grant fund or something. But I think those are sort of the main things, I would say, are the main challenges.
Right. And to avoid those challenges in the future, perhaps for other entrepreneurs, what are some lessons that you have gleaned from the series so far, or what are some solutions that have been proposed or should be proposed, perhaps, maybe even for other cities that are looking to better support their Black and brown entrepreneurs?
So I think we're still trying to figure solutions out. I mean, I don't think that there's really been a real solution. I think that some of the things that are working towards solutions are, education access is one, especially for like business. And I think also an intersectionality when it comes to teaching like entrepreneurship and business and tech. It's not one size fits all. And I think that is sometimes where there are failures, where some programs can be maybe more effective than others if they're more conscious, either culturally or just in general of the populations that they're trying to help.
Right. Yeah. And you were already familiar with some of the entrepreneurs who you've spoken to before the series, but not all of them. So curious about your reporting process, how you are approaching the reporting in the first place, since this isn't your typical article necessarily, as well as, yeah, you're how familiar you are with the entrepreneurs you're talking to.
So, it ranges from a couple of them I really just met doing the series, and, you know, or this was the first time that I talked to them, to people who I've covered multiple times.
I think Nerd It Now, for instance, that showed up in coverage for years.
Right. I think the process is a little bit different, because I think they are sort of in control in these stories. So usually what we do is it's a phone call. Sometimes it's a Zoom or something like that. And it usually lasts about 45 minutes to an hour. I ask them a bunch of questions. It's usually just like I open the floor, like I tell them what we're doing. And now at this point, we have examples of previous articles that they can read. You know, we might talk a little bit before we really start, and then they just, you know, I'll steer it to like, let's talk about, you know, how you got started. Now let's talk about your background. Let's talk about your challenges. What's working? What's not working? And sometimes, you know, there could be, sometimes I don't have to even, sometimes those things just come up because they're, you know, they're basically just telling their stories. And that is the purpose of it, is that they're being able to have a voice. Even some of these companies that I've covered multiple times, they haven't had a voice in this way in the media before, because, you know, maybe they're opening up a new location, or maybe they're doing this, and the last thing that they're really thinking about talking about is the challenges that they're going through. They just sort of are like, yeah, we have this new, you know, we're doing this, and everybody, you know, so to open it up and to say, like, you know, tell us the whole story, including the, you know, your challenges and difficulties, mm-hmm. is something different. And I think, you know, it is giving a platform to voices that don't usually have them, even if they've already had media coverage. And so, you know, with these stories, I will go back and I will transcribe them almost word for word, except for, you know, obviously things that are obviously sort of
the ums and the
that, yeah. And so, you know, it can be time consuming, but I think it's really important to get their voices, and not have it be, first of all, that like I'm trying to tell their story, they're telling their story, and also I'm not observing them. They're the one, you know, like I think that a lot of times with Black and Brown people in general in the media, but including business people, there's often sort of a an observation, like an otherization, and like we're observing this, and I don't like that kind of reporting. So I really wanted it to be from their point of view, not, you know, anyone else's point of view. Right. That's really the process for that.
That's great. Thank you, Holly. And this is, so again, we're at 6 of 12. So hopefully we can check in at the end of the series. So thank you for sharing your process.
Yeah, thanks.
And now for the kicker, a quick roundup of tech news from our other Technically markets. In DC, Michelle Graham reported that the district ranked second in the US and Canada for its ability to attract and grow tech talent, according to a recent CBRE report. It moved up 2 spots compared to its ranking last year, mainly due to the high concentration of millennials and high-tech degree completions here. In Philly, Paige Gross reported that King of Prussia-based tax software company Vertex set the terms for its IPO. It comes just a few weeks after connected healthcare company Accolade, with headquarters in Plymouth Meeting in Seattle, went public at the beginning of July. In Pittsburgh, the firm Teletracking Technologies won a $10.2 million contract from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services to collect and analyze COVID-19 data from some 3,200 hospitals across the country. That comes after the Trump administration announced last week that hospitals would now need to submit their COVID-19 tracking data to a private firm rather than the CDC. In Baltimore, Stephen Babcock covered the trend that Maryland VC funding defied dire pandemic predictions, rising in Q2. Area companies collectively raised $358 million for the second quarter of 2020, posting its best quarter in a few years, even amid an economic downturn. It's a trend that we're seeing across all of our markets in the Mid-Atlantic. And this has been Technically on the Record. I'm Julie Zeglin. Thanks for listening.